Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. QT and Sign Guy with you as normal here on a Sunday. Real fast, if you're looking for some wrestling today, Bizarro Lucha in Indianapolis, Indiana today. You also have Prime Time Wrestling in Paris, Kentucky, and Blue Collar Wrestling like every Sunday in Portland, Oregon. That one featuring the North Portland street fight between Tex Thompson and Lance Dean. So definitely get out there, support your local wrestling wherever it may be near you. And without any further ado, I want to welcome our guest to the show today, Rico de la Vega. Welcome to Turnbuckle Turmoil. Thank you for being here.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. Can't wait.
Well, since it is your first time with this, we will start you out with our traditional first-timer question today. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
It's pretty simple. At the end of the day, it just comes down to, me being younger and everything, pretty hyper child. My mom one day, she just decided to sit me in front of the TV to watch wrestling now. And this is not something that she, just put me in front of the TV for the sake of putting me in front of it. She basically knew what was on. She was familiar. She used to tell me a lot about Pedro Morales and Bruno Sammartino, Freddie Blassie, like a ton of guys from back in the day. So I just remember her sitting me down in front of the TV, and I see this, like, big green streak just, like, run across the screen. Turns out it was the Ultimate Warrior. So I just got intrigued. I'm like, dude, like, he's so hype, he's just like running down the ramp. Okay, let's see what's up. I see these two guys going at it, and I'm like, okay, that was it for me. Soon after that, my mom, she just kept up with the wrestling with me. We would watch, like, wrestling together. She'd buy me all the action figures. She basically took care of my fix when it came to wrestling, so to speak. Fast forward, I've always wanted to do it. Where I grew up at is home of the world famous Monster Factory, which is a school that I attended. So, it was the universe kind of lined it up for me in a good way. But I ended up going to the Monster Factory and started my wrestling career close to 6 years ago.
Now, in your wrestling career, you have done many roles in professional wrestling. You have managed, you've been a TV commentator, you've wrestled. There's quite a few things that you have done. Do you think that when wrestlers are starting out, they should learn all of the aspects of professional wrestling for the longevity of it and to kind of understand the business as a whole better? Or do you think that people that focus on one specific aspect of it tend to do a little bit better in that specific aspect of it?
I would say I have to agree in the sense that you should always know all aspects of your job. Especially in this realm that is professional wrestling, you are going to be placed in a different role each time, whether it be heel versus babyface, whether it be, working gorilla to working commentary, whether it be being a manager or just helping the gimmicks from the ring, just with the guys drop their robes or whatever it may be. You need to learn all aspects. It just comes with the territory. You're more versatile, therefore you're more useful to somebody. Somebody's going to look at that person and say, hey, you know what? He can wrestle, but he can also manage, but he can hold his own on the mic. Maybe we can put him in commentary. So the more valuable you are to your company, it's based on how much knowledge you have of the business, but you know, also what you can do in it. I mean, mind you, that's not taken away from the guys that, you know, focus 100% in the wrestling and they do well. Shoot, if you can, you know, hold your own in the ring and that's all it takes, then by all means, go for it. But it doesn't hurt to have something different in your back pocket, which has definitely helped me with, you know, all aspects of the jobs I've done in the wrestling world.
You mentioned the Monster Factory, and it's very well reputed as being one of the top schools anywhere to go to learn professional wrestling. A lot of great talent has come out of the Monster Factory. Do you find that there's a reputation when you go to new places and they find out that you're from the Monster Factory that gives you a little bit more credibility than if you were to go to a new place and you were coming from a school that maybe wasn't as well known as the Monster Factory?
There's definitely, you know, there's a reputation that it does carry with you being a Monster Factory graduate or, you know, just being part of the Monster Factory itself. That reputation is a good one to have, especially in the world of professional wrestling. Anywhere you go, as long as you have that Monster Factory badge, it shows that you do have discipline, that you did learn your basics, your foundation, and that you have been able to carry, you know, carry yourself, whether it be on the mic, whether it be in a match, whatever the case is, whatever your job is, whether you're a referee, it basically says that you can hold your own. We can trust this guy. We can put him in the ring, and he's going to do what he's told to do.
One of the brand new places that you were very recently was North Dakota. I know that you debuted there about a week ago. What was it like going to North Dakota and performing at a place that may not be on a lot of people's radar?
Oddly enough, it was definitely a great experience. I mean, you know, I'm really big on like the traveling aspect of it. You know, professional wrestling offers you such a canvas, if you will, because you get to travel to all these different places to do your art, to perform, you know. You know, in my travel, I have to say, like, this is the first time with me going to North Dakota. I actually saw roads with nothing on it but maybe a few trees and, like, this flatland and stuff. So it was a big culture shock. But, you know, once I got there, got to the venue, the seats started filling up. Everybody there loved professional wrestling. I loved it. You know, it was a great crowd. Reminded me a lot of the Canadian crowds that I've worked in front of. You know, just the way that they appreciate the wrestling there. Every region has a type of fan as it does its own type of wrestler, as it does its own type of wrestling company. You know, North Dakota are different. You know, they love the wrestling there, but performing there was great. You know, I got to work with Danny Duggan, who's a buddy of mine, and I was able to debut for his Canadian tour this year, which was a good time. So, you know, definitely had a really, really great experience over in North Dakota.
I found that very often crowds in different areas will like different things out of professional wrestling. Did you find that the crowd in North Dakota was different than crowds in other parts of the country that you wrestle, or was it a fairly easy crowd to be able to figure out what they wanted?
I mean, in a sense, yeah, there is your typical type of fan in each region, like I mentioned before, but, you know, if you love professional wrestling, you love professional wrestling. You have to cater to your audience. Yeah, you know, there's going to be audiences that are going to, you know, give you your oohs and ahs when you do, you know, a 450 off the top, when you have other crowds that'll give you your oohs and ahs when you just do a simple, you know, splash off the top rope or just a regular splash or something or a dive. Like, it all depends on what crowd you're catering to. But when it comes to that crowd, like I said, they reminded me a lot of a Canadian crowd in the sense that they really get behind their good guys. They love their good guys. You know, they're behind their guy and they stick with them 100%. And it was just so much more fun because, you know, me being heel and everything, it made me work harder. I had to make those people get really, really behind the faces, and I had to sit there and, like, do what I could to make them hate me. And, you know, I had the pleasure of sharing the ring with some really, really good guys, and, you know, we made it work. So the crowd was, they reacted very, very well and accordingly. So I really enjoyed the crowd out there.
You mentioned wrestling in Canada, which oftentimes is a very different animal than wrestling in other parts of the world. They have sort of a different style and a different taste in wrestling in Canada oftentimes. Do you ever have to change things that you do to entertain the Canadian fans as opposed to when you wrestle in the United States?
There's really no major changes that need to be made, you know, in regard to my style of wrestling or what I cater to. Again, every crowd's going to be different. Like I said, a Canadian crowd, the only thing that I can say from a wrestler's perspective that sets them apart is the fact that, you know, they are 100% into it, and I don't think they're as critical as, say, your American crowd. You know, the American crowd, again, this may get misconstrued, whatever. I'm not saying anything bad about American crowds, but, like, you know, we tend to be a bit judgy. We tend to be, well, you know, he did do a triple moonsault, but I've been a quadruple easily, whatever, whatever. You know, we start playing fantasy book and stuff. That's what I would say is the biggest distinguishable difference between, you know, your Canadian crowd versus your U.S. crowd. The ones I've worked in front of in Canada have been great. They've loved everything. They're very appreciative, and they let you know it. The ones here in America, too. Again, I'm not generalizing an entire, you know, country of fans or whatnot, but you tend to find more judgy and more critical fans in the United States than you would say in Canada. So, you know, that's probably the major difference that I've seen.
You've also done work with Ring of Honor as a commentator. Ring of Honor, of course, a nationally televised company, and they have matches all over North America. What was the experience like getting into Ring of Honor as a commentator?
Oh, the entire experience was fantastic. I started with them back in 2015, you know, worked my way up through the ranks and stuff. I was still training at the Monster Factory at the time. I was sharing my time between there and the Ring of Honor Dojo, which at the time was at in Bristol, PA, which now is the home of Cheeseburgers, worldwide dojo over there. So I would split my time between back and forth there in the Monster Factory. So it came to one of the Ring of Honor tryouts. You know, did the tryout, whatnot. Went in as a wrestler slash manager because I did cut promos as a manager, but I also did the in-ring work. So kind of tried to show off a little bit of both. And it came down to where they split us up usually to where it's two teams, Team A and Team B. One will be doing promos, the other ones will be wrestling. And they'll switch us, you know, throughout the day. So it came time to do promos. I cut a promo and I cut it in front of it was Caprice Coleman, Ian Gabani, Kevin Kelly, Adam Cole, and who was it? I'll say one more. Oh, Rhett Titus. So, yeah, we were in the promo room, we cut a promo, everybody, like, popped for it. They were like, oh, man, it's so good. You know, Kevin Kelly eventually started talking to me. He's like, dude, you know, I know you want to wrestle yourself, but that's great, but we need to put you out there. You can always work your way into managing them later into wrestling. I'm like, cool. You know, I dig it. So I was like, all right, let's see what I can do with this. So I kept on working with Ring of Honor in a capacity where it was like more of like a backstage role. So I was kind of learning like all the elements of the working there, you know, backstage, you know, setting up, tearing down, all that stuff. It came September 2016. I got an email. It was from Kevin Kelly and Hunter, Delirious. And they were basically just letting me know, hey, you know what? We're going to have this pay-per-view. We're going to start doing a Spanish simulcast for the pay-per-views. We want you to come on and do the Spanish commentary for us. Could lead to other things, blah, blah, blah. Of course I'm going to say yeah. So, yeah, I went ahead and started working with them. Did the first pay-per-view, everything went well, you know, we just continued. Eventually, it got me my spot on Future of Honor as well as Women of Honor. Then eventually did some episodes on TV as well. So, like, I mean, the experience, the entire experience itself was, it was just something that you never think of. You know, it kind of came out of nothing. I was not expecting it. I'm so, so happy and so fortunate that it did happen because, like I said, I love this business. I was able to already, with only a couple of years in, you know, humbly boast that, hey, I'm part of the Ring of Honor roster. Like, this is pretty cool. So, yeah, it was a heck of a feeling, like, just being part of it all and being able to see things such as, like, you know, when AJ left and, like, when Mike and Maria left. Like, so many pivotal moments that I got to experience. I mean, it, you can't advocate or you can't duplicate that at all.
Had you ever done Spanish commentary for any other promotion prior to Ring of Honor, or was it kind of a trial by fire for you to be able to do that?
I did no commentary whatsoever before I did the stuff on Ring of Honor. So, yeah, basically they're like, hey, you know what? Your promos are good. You know how to carry yourself well on the microphone. You have good, you know, proper, like, mic etiquette, you know. Let's give it a shot. So that's where it was at. And, you know, Ian Riccoboni took me under his wing. Kevin Kelly took me under his wing. So I had so many good, you know, people to look at when it came to stuff like that. You know, I got to enjoy Steve Corino for a little bit and be under his learning tree for a little bit before he left for WWE. So, I mean, I had the right people around me. It was just a matter of making everything make sense and making it fall into place, which, you know, in essence, it did because I kept my job. So everything, yeah, just basically happened like that.
Now, in professional wrestling, one of the things that has caught fire in the last few years is streaming services. There's wrestling available on, like, the Roku devices, iPay-per-views, and several other forms. It's become a way for independent companies to sort of get their name out there, attract newer fans, get support for merchandise sales and that type of thing. What do you think of the streaming service era here in independent professional wrestling? Do you think it's going to be a major help to independent wrestling overall, or do you think that there's going to be a chance that it'll hinder independent wrestling?
I think that, you know, such as everything, I mean, everything has the opportunity to thrive and grow. It depends on how you approach it. Now, is the streaming service beneficial for independent wrestling? 100%. We need to get our faces out there. There's so much talent out right now that needs to get seen, and they're not because they're working their local VFWs, which, mind you, that's all good and everything, but you need to document this stuff. Like, even myself, it was a long time. I barely have any videos up of me wrestling or anything like that, unless it's, like, on the Monster Factory streaming service or if it's somebody's random video they uploaded, you know? Because usually it's usually just me, so I can't record myself when I'm doing my thing. So the streaming service would be definitely essential for independent wrestling as a whole, just for the exposure aspect of it. Not to mention, you got guys that don't only want to be wrestlers. You got guys that don't only want to be refs. You got sound guys. You got camera guys. Let's start teaching these guys how to do camera work, because if we want to get to the big league, we got to learn how to work that hard cam. We got to learn how to work that floor cam. We got to be able to cater to not only the audience in front of us, but the crowd at home. We got to convey that emotion through that camera, through that lens, and convey it to the people at home, or else those channels are changing, because that's the thing. We have so many options down there. You have to make them look at us. So, yeah, in that aspect, as far as the exposure, as far as, you know, getting out there, definitely it's going to help independent wrestling now. The market is a bit oversaturated. You know, everybody who's able to is opening up a new company, which is fine. More power to you. You know, I'm all about everybody eating. If anybody that knows me, you ask them, I'm like, look, live and let live, and everybody can eat. Those are my two, like, philosophies in life. Like, everybody can eat. We just got to help each other. Like, we got to look at the bigger picture. But being that the independents are so oversaturated with so many companies, we need to just have one streaming service that's going to allow you to watch every single one of these companies. We can't have that. We have ABC Wrestling who has their streaming service, and then we have DEF Wrestling over here who has their streaming service. And it's like you're paying all of this money to all these different feds. Let's go ahead and get one streaming service that's going to cater to every single streaming to every single company that signs up with them for the service, and boom, you can consolidate everything. And I think that would be definitely a hell of a lot more efficient for, you know, getting the product out there. So, yeah, definitely streaming services would be great for professional wrestling if it's just one streaming service for many companies, not just scattered and sporadic, like, streaming services for various companies.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know QT has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things to him.
Go ahead, brother. Shoot.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Mr. Rico De La Vega.
What's up, brother? How's it going?
Mr. Rico, I would like to welcome you to what I believe is our first interview of our new, of our second decade of being on the air. We started Turnbuckle Turmoil in 2010, so I think you are very close or right on to being our first interview of our second decade.
Well, you know what? That is very good news to hear. A pivotal moment indeed, and I'm glad to be a part of it. Thank you for having me.
No problem. No problem. Rico, if you could travel back in time and had a choice between these three managers, whom would you choose and why? They are Sherry Martel, Jim Cornette, or the lovely Elizabeth?
Oof, man, tough one. Go back in time and meet them. Huh. Well, let's toss Corny out, being that, you know, he's still with us. But if I had the opportunity of one of the two ladies that you've mentioned to get to meet them, I would have to say, I mean, and trust me, this is really tough because these are three people I would legitimately love to meet. But like I said, Corny's still around. As far as Elizabeth and Sherry, I'd love to meet Sherry simply because you have somebody who transitioned so well from the wrestling into the managing role. You know, she does it both. And that's kind of like me. I consider myself a triptych simply for the fact that I do manage, that I do commentary, and that I do wrestle. You know, you have to have a very strong appreciation for this business in order for you to be able to transition from role to role as it's given. So I totally respect that about Sherry Martel. You know, and again, I respect everything Elizabeth did as well, but, you know, Sherry has that up on her in the aspect that, you know, she does wrestle as well. So definitely Sherry.
Okay. All right. I kind of meant to say if you could travel back in time into the 80s and meet Jim Cornette. Say if you had Stewie Griffin's time machine. That's what I meant to say.
Oh, so you're talking Cornette in his prime?
Yeah.
Okay, so see, that's a curveball. So, you know, I'd go with Sherry for sure. But if I could meet Cornette in his prime back in the 80s and just pick his brain, sit down with him and just like, yeah, 100% Jim Cornette then.
Okay. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, Mr. Vega, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans what your entrance music was when you first started out in wrestling?
Oh, man. My first entrance music? I don't remember. Shoot. Well, for my very first match, I came out with Bonifant Martinez, who's now Damian Priest, and NXT, and QT Marshall, who's an AEW, and we used QT Marshall's music at that time because we were known as a collective group of real-life heels, along with Matt Riddle. But if we're going to go solo, the first song is this one song. It's a Latin artist. He's from Puerto Rico. I know the artist name is Yomo, which is Y-O-M-O. It's a Spanish like hip hop artist named Yomo, and it was this one song, but I cannot remember the life of me. But it was like a very like reggaetonish, like very flavorish song. It was really cool.
Oh, okay, Now this is probably wrong, but I heard a rumor that you once used the boy band Menudo as some of your entrance music, some of their music, Menudo.
No. Not Menudo. Maybe Ricky Martin. I'll admit to that. Maybe some Living La Vida Loca, but not Menudo.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Vega, my wrestling sources in Shelton, Washington, have informed me that you once tore your labrum, shoulder labrum. Can you tell us how you overcame this injury?
All right. So I tore both of my labrum, crazy enough. Each time that I did it, it was either weightlifting or during training, during a match. So in overcoming it, basically, when I ended up getting, like, the most hurt that I did when I tore them the second time, this was back, let's see. So I can't remember the exact date, but I remember tearing them. I was out for 10 months. Now, this is going from a solid 204 pounds, you know, I was a rather bigger guy, and, you know, but in shape. I went down to a sickly looking 170 pounds, and I was just, like, so depressed and all that stuff. So it was really, really hard to overcome because, you know, as a wrestler, well, anybody who's passionate about anything, when you're passionate about something, this is something that you want to continuously keep doing, whether it's, like, do it yourself or watch it or hear about it or talk about it, you got to get your fix. So being able to not work out and not be in a ring for 10 months tortured me. Like, I had to find everything possible for me to, you know, be able to distract myself so I'm not thinking so much about wrestling. And, like, you know, I was just going into a downward spiral. But eventually, 10 months after, I ended up, you know, just kind of, in the end, it's a mind over matter thing. I started feeling better. I started doing the physical therapy that I was recommended to do because I refused to do the surgery because it would have kept me out longer. But I started doing the PT, and with that, you know, little by little, I started feeling better and better. I could move. I had more of a motion in my shoulders and stuff. Once that started happening, my confidence started coming back. So, you know, it was a rough patch of 10 months, but once I started seeing progress, that's when, you know, I just hit the ground running and kept going.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Congratulations to your determination to overcome that. That's very good. Well, Mr. Rico, you mentioned, of course, to a sign guy that you did color commentary. Was Michael Cole or Taz or maybe one of my favorites, Jeremy Borash, an influence on you?
I would have to say that possibly in the commentary aspect. Michael Cole, definitely. He has some good transitions and segues. He's very he's very precise in when he does his commentary, so he is definitely one. Taz is more of so of a I see more of a Taz style when it comes to me because he's just more your typical color guy. You're, hey, I'm a wrestler, but I'm calling it how it is, and I can give this perspective from the wrestling world that your normal Michael Cole commentator who isn't a wrestler, you know, can give you. So, yeah, definitely Michael Cole as far as, like, transitions and segues and things like that. But when you see Taz, he's more of a guy that gets it because he's been in it. That's kind of what I came to.
Okay. All right, Taz. Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, Rico, have you ever entered any wrestling ring while having the Puerto Rican flag draped on your shoulders?
I think as a Puerto Rican wrestler, that has to happen. It's kind of like when we're born. We're already born with, like, a tattoo of a Puerto Rican flag. It's kind of a given. But, yes, that has happened, and I can probably say more than once, you know, we're a proud people. We're loud and we're proud, so it probably will happen again.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Rico, when you were still in Puerto Rico as a young child, and I believe you were in Puerto Rico up till the age of 8. Did your mom take you to the El Yankin Rainforest? El Yunkin. Yunkin.
El Yunkin.
El Yunkin.
No, I lived on the southern part of the island, so the Yunkin was, like, more in the central area. That's actually around the area where my mom's from, but I never got to go see it. So that's definitely on my bucket list once I make it back over there, which is definitely a goal of mine. I definitely want to wrestle in Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, when you do fly back to Puerto Rico, is visiting the Illyucan rainforest and capturing a native bird so you can use the said bird as your wrestling mascot. Do you have any plans for that, capturing a bird?
Possibly flipping the bird, but not sure about catching it. But we'll see. Only time will tell.
Oh, okay. I only ask that because the great wrestler Coco Beware, he had a mascot named Frankie, and he was a parrot. And I think maybe Frankie was originally from the Illyucan rainforest. Yes.
That's a possibility. I remember Coco Beware and Frankie very well. So it is. We have interesting fauna out there. So there's I think we do have macaws. So there's a possibility. He's one of us.
Wow, I think you do need a macaw as your mascot. It'd be along the lines of Matilda the Bulldog for the Heart Foundation. I think you could make an impact with a macaw. Yes.
That's not a bad idea. I'm going to see when I get down, I'll make sure I put that as a clause in my contract. I have to have a macaw. And they last like 60 years, so it's a one-time spending thing.
Wow, all right. Okay, very good. I think it would be better than an Illyucan rainforest frog, you know, a frog. A little bit better.
Got to have the
okay.
Cookie, the native cookie from our island, yes.
Yes. Oh, okay. All right. Well, Rico, the largest rum distillery in the world is in Cantan, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, Cantan, Puerto Rico. Casa Bacardi factory is so big that it produces 70% of the rum sold in the U.S. In addition, Puerto Rico is the only rum producer in the world to maintain a minimum aging law for its rum. My question is, after you wrestle some of your opponents, did they feel like they had drank a quart of rum?
More than likely. I mean, you've stated the facts yourself. I mean, that stuff runs through our veins. Trust me, once they catch this left hand, they're going to be stumbling.
Oh, stumbling. Okay. All right. Okay. Forearms to the head tend to do that. Forearms. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Leave him so drunk he's going to see forearms.
Ooh, okay. Wow. Boy. All right. Well, Rico, can you tell us, is it true that you had a match with Tito Santana?
I did, yeah. Back, I want to say, in August, if I'm not mistaken, it was not only myself, it was me along with two tag partners, which collectively as a trio were known as Caribbean Arrogance. And it was Tito Santana, along with a couple of the, local guys around here, Jordy Lee and Joey Jet Avalon. And we had a nice little trios match. And trust me, I was a giddy little 9-year-old on the inside the entire time, but I kept it professional.
Wow. Okay. Did Tito bring his A game?
Oh, absolutely. The man still got it. He still got it. Trust me. The first of all, you got to thank the genetics because the man doesn't age a bit. And he can still hold his own in that ring. And trust me, he packs a wallop. I took one.
Well, talk about holding your own. As even if you get up there a little bit in age, we have a Northwest wrestler up here that has appeared in several of our venues, Kevin Sullivan. He kind of reminds me of Tito Santana in a way. Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster.
Oh, I love Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan's the man. I first met him at Ring of Honor when they were doing the Stable Evil, which was with him, Steve Carino, and Punishment Martinez and BJ Whitmer. He gave me some of the best advice when it came to commentary and the in-the-ring stuff. And, yeah, the guy knows his stuff. And then fast forward – a couple years to when I'm now here in Wisconsin. He did a few shows that I was on, and I had the pleasure to take him back to his hotel each time. So we got to know each other a bit well. He's an amazing guy, to say the least.
Oh, that's good that he gave you some commentary and some advice. Kevin Sullivan, yes, who I'd like to point out was recently inducted into the Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Fame, class of 2020. Congratulations, Kevin, if you're listening.
Congrats, Kevin.
Oh, okay. That's all right. That's fantastic. Okay. Well, Rico, who do you think was a bigger influence on you, Pedro Morales or the Ultimate Warrior, who you saw as a young kid in New Jersey on TV?
Well, see, here's the thing about it. It's like it's such a difficult task to be able to categorize it and put it into one thing, because you've got Pedro Morales, who in me, I look to him as that source of inspiration and drive, as that source that, you know what, some kid from Puerto Rico can grow up and go to the WWF or WWWF at the time. Like, I can do that if I want to. So he broke the mold for so much of us. So, yeah, obviously I look to him in that aspect. As far as, you know, the Ultimate Warrior, I look to him as, you're the one that caught my eye. You're the one that made me say, hey, look at that. It's wrestling. Him before anybody. And if I'm really being honest with you, my all-time favorite, who's always been my favorite, since I was able to, like, pick my own guy, has been The Undertaker, you know? A lot of people attribute the Ultimate Warrior to, like, oh, yeah, that's your guy. That's just one of the guys, you know what I mean? He delivers a different source of inspiration. Like I said, he's the one who drew me to wrestling. Pedro Morales makes me proud to be a Puerto Rican pursuing this career. And, you know, so many different people offer many different things. So it's hard to just categorize it into just one person. So.
Okay. All right. Well said. Okay. Well, Rico, have you ever worked with a River City Championship wrestler named the Angry Dragon? And if so, what makes him so angry?
Oh, man. Good old Angry Dragon. You know what? I think it's the fact that I speak Spanish and he doesn't.
Oh, okay. Oh, bilingual, yes. Okay.
Hey, like,
wow.
I tell everyone, I'm better than you in two languages.
Oh, okay. Have you ever had him as a tag team partner?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. All right. He must be one of the ones that receives your forearms. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Rico, one of my favorite Puerto Rican wrestlers was Carlito. He spit in the face of people who were not cool. What if you could travel back in time and be on Carlito's cabana? How great would that have been?
That would have been awesome. And I will share a little tidbit about me with you as well. Where I'm from in Puerto Rico, that's where Carlos Colon and Carlito and Edwin and all of them grew up at. And I actually had the same teacher that my dad and Carlos Colon had for first grade. And me and the boys used to play together when we were kids. Lo and behold, years later, now I know who they are because it was explained to me who they were. And I was like, oh, come on, man. But, yeah, definitely it would have been so slick if I could be part of the commander. Come on. It just writes itself.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And another wrestler that came out of Puerto Rico, he wrestled for New Japan Wrestling, Savio Vega. He got his start in the mid-80s, and he wrestled in Puerto Rico, or was known as El Hombre Dinamita, or the Dynamite Man. And he often wrestled in red and black face paint. Did you ever get a chance to meet Savio Vega?
Absolutely, various times. We actually, first time I met him was at, it was at a show for NYWC in New York. We did in the Booms in Queens. He was there with Miguel Perez, like the whole Los Boricuas crew and stuff. And now, mind you, you're talking about somebody who was instrumental in molding who I wanted to be as far as wrestling. Savio Vega was definitely one of them. When he came out, like, to help out Razor Ramon, who at the time I still thought was, like, Hispanic, so I'm over here like, yo. I'm like, yeah, man, we're doing big things. It was like finding out Santa Claus didn't exist when I found out that, you know, Razor Scott Hall, just some white guy. But anyway, that's a whole other story. but yeah, Savio Vega, he was so instrumental in, you know, because that's another Latino, another Puerto Rican that's doing big things where I want to be at. But I had the good fortune of meeting him in New York the one time. We were able to chop it up for a little bit. But then I didn't see him again up until this past October. Was it October? October, November. You know, he's working with MLW now, and I'm good friends with Jacob Fatu. And when they came to Chicago, he was like, hey, who's come through, whatever, let's hang out. So I got, you know, over there, got to kick it with him and a bunch of the guys out there, and I got to talk to Savio, and I told him, hey, you remember me from back when? After, you know, a few refreshers and stuff, he realized, oh, my God, I remember who you are. So we started chopping it up and stuff, and it was just awesome. Like, I'm here having a conversation with a guy that I used to watch on TV with my mom, and it was just so surreal. It was great. So I'm very, very, very fortunate to be able to break bread with him.
Wow, very good. I'm glad you had a chance to do so in New York. Yes, New York. That's great. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Rico, I know that you mentioned, or I did a little bit of research. When you were 8 years old, you moved from Puerto Rico to North New Jersey. And can you remember where you lived in North New Jersey, is there any chance that you live near the area where they shot the comedy movie Jay and Silent Bob?
You know what? I got to think how far it is from there. See, that's more South Central Jersey where they shot.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to remember what the exact, like, time between, because like I first arrived, I was in Newark, which was in North Jersey, about like 20 minutes away from New York City. So that's like more on the northern side. Yeah, I'm not sure. Wouldn't be able to tell you. It's probably about an hour away.
Oh, okay. Hour away. All right. Okay. Well, Rico, I know that your mom worked very hard to provide you with wrestling memorabilia, and she was there at all your events and growing up, and she was a good provider, even though times might have been a slight struggle. Your mom reminds me of Gene Simmons' mom. Now, Gene Simmons, the bass player of Kiss, was not born in the United States. He grew up in Israel. And he immigrated to the United States, and they lived in New York City. And his mom was a survivor of a World War II concentration camp. And
wow.
She was a single mother and provided for Gene. And she was a good role model because Gene was often quoted as saying, I listened to some of her stories about the concentration camps that she survived. And I never wanted to let her down, and I knew that I was much more privileged and never faced the hardships that she had, so I never drank or did drugs. So, Gene Simmons' mom kind of reminds me of your mom, hardworking and provider.
No, that's really cool. I'm very, you know, I appreciate the kind of words, the sentiment, because, like, yeah, I mean, it's as much as I like, you know, I like listening to Kiss. I had no clue. I knew that he had immigrated to the States, but I wasn't aware of the background as far as his mom goes. But no, the similarities definitely there. You know, when we first came here, she just on a whim came out here, and we came to nothing, like I said. And it's, you know, it's humbling. It's very humbling. You know, that's why I appreciate so much that has gone on in my life when it comes to wrestling. Like, you know, I could, you know, humbly boast that I've been part of that major roster in Ring of Honor. I can humbly boast that I've gotten to travel to different countries to do something I'm passionate about. And it was due to, you know, I wouldn't say it's good fortune or whatever, because you do have to work hard to get what you want. So definitely, if it's one thing that my mom, even to this day, still instills in me, is like, work hard, bust your ass, you know, work for what you have to get. You can't just sit around and like let it fall in your lap, because it's not going to happen that way. A lot of folks are lucky. They're very fortunate that, you know, they get, I guess you can call it a handout or whatever, that they get the help or the assistance to get to that next level. But a lot of us, we're just we're just trying to bust our butts to get to that next level, and we're trying to make it happen for ourselves. But yeah, again, if it wasn't for my mom's persistence and her teaching me those values, I would not be this far where I am right now.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay. When you see your next, tell her hi from Turnbuckle Turmoil. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Rico, do you still keep in contact with a person, Damian Priest? Do you do business with Damian?
You know what? Not as often as I'd like. You know, obviously he's on a bigger playing field right now. So it's good to put it this way. I get to see him every week on NXT. So, like, that's always good. I know he's okay. I know he's doing well. Again, I'm probably going to end up seeing him when I'm in Tampa this, you know, this year for WrestleMania week. You know, I keep in constant contact with Matt Riddle. I keep in constant contact with Nick Overelli, who's in NXT as well. You know, people here and there just have more free time than others, and I understand that. Life happens. But, yeah, I try to keep in contact with as many people as possible from, like, you know, that I have in different other companies, because, again, these are goals of mine that I'm trying to set as well. So whenever an opportunity comes up, these are the guys that I go to kind of help mentor me as to, you know, what the next step I should take is.
Wow, okay. All right, very good. Very well said. Okay. Well, Mr. Rico, did you ever capture tag team gold with a man named Wild Man Congo?
Yeah. Various times. We had a faction going on. Myself and Wild Man Congo was part of it. We've caught the tag team titles at the MFPW various times, whether it was him and I, whether it was Congo and Josh Briggs, who's the Evolve champion currently. He was part of our faction, the Beast Cartel. Kyle the Beast, who does a lot of big things at GCW. So, yeah, as a collective, the Beast Cartel, we won the titles plenty of times. And trust me, with guys like Josh Briggs, Wildman Congo, and Kyle the Beast, and even Nick Camerato, who now is Nick Ogarelli in NXT, and Fala Ba, who is currently on Impact. So, yeah.
Now, speaking of Wild Man Congo, have you ever met a wrestler known as Congo Kong?
I'm familiar with Congo Kong. I have yet to meet him. We haven't had the opportunity to cross paths. But whenever I do mention Wild Man Congo, that's the first question I get asked for folks that are unfamiliar with Congo. Because Congo, I mean, on the East Coast, he's well known. And obviously, in the Midwest, you know, different regions are kind of unfamiliar to other regions' standouts. And, like, you know, you have to be pretty extensively traveled in order for people to know you outside of your region. So I get it. But, like, yeah, when I'm out here in the Midwest and I mention, oh, yeah, me and Congo used to tag, or, yeah, me and Wildman Congo, Beast Cartel, it's like, oh, you mean Congo Kong? I'm like, no. He's on Impact. He was this, that, the other thing. Completely different guy. But both great. Great talent, both great athletes, and two agile big guys, man. Two of the most agile big guys I've probably seen.
Wow, I know they are agile. Yes, okay. All right. Well, Mr. La Vega, you were quoted as saying, make sure you subscribe to the Butch Man, especially if you are sitting in the doctor's office or on the toilet. Does that also include if you've had a meal at Taco Bell? That's what I'm asking.
Oh, the Butch Man. I remember that promo. Yeah. No, definitely. Subscribe to the Butch Man if you got to take a dump. Real talk.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. La Vega, it's been good talking with you. At this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sun Guy.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thank you, QT. Well, Mr. De La Vega, one of the styles of pro wrestling that has really taken off in the last few years is the submission-based wrestling with the advent of mixed martial arts and that genre getting more and more popular. We've seen a lot more submission-based professional wrestling matches come up. We see a lot more grapplers that go for the submission holds to win matches. What do you think of the submission-based style of pro wrestling?
I think it's great. I mean, again, it's that story that you want to tell. If it makes sense to do submission, if it makes sense to make it a submission match, then go for it. At the end of the day, it's all about the crowd reaction. It's all about the story that you're portraying to them. And if they are satisfied with said story, then you did your job. My rule is make it make sense. Grappling, wrestling, fighting, it all works hand in hand. What we do, you know, all of those elements play a part in it. And at the end of the day, we all have a thing. We have to remember that. I'm a big fan of submission. You know, it tells that story where, all right, I got to watch my limbs. I got to make sure that I don't leave when I hit you with a wild swing, I don't leave my arm out there too long because you might catch it and put me in an arm bar. You know, if I shoot for a kick, you might grab me and pull me in some crazy ankle lock. That story is great, but if you're not a submissive guy, don't try to put on submission. When I was just starting to branch out and into different as far as like wrestling and wrestling in different places, I remember at that time I started training in Pennsylvania with Matt Riddle, and me and Matt, we would always be like, all right, let's do a wrestling match and let's grapple. And the way that we would train is, you know, we just put on different holds and try to get out of it. And you got to play to your strengths. If you don't have to transition well from one move to another and place that hold and put that submission, then by all means, go for it. But you don't want to be that guy trying to fit a square peg into the circle hole because you can't force something. Once you force something, it's not real anymore. And it not only looks dumb doing it, it looks dumb to everybody watching it. And you're basically burying yourself at that point. So within context, and, you know, if you make it look good, yes, submissions are in the place. It's fighting. It's martial arts. It's part of what we use in order to entertain. So, yeah, it does belong in professional wrestling, at least in my opinion.
Well, we have a game on the show that we like to play. We call it Fact or Crap. I will throw out an urban legend that has been making its way around the wrestling business for a while, based specifically on your knowledge and your own intuition. You decide if you think that it is fact or crap. Are you prepared for a round of fact or crap today?
Let's do it, man. I deal with a lot of crap on a daily basis, so let's see.
All right. Your urban legend is that the Iron Sheik was offered $100,000 to break the leg of Hulk Hogan rather than losing the match, which Hulk Hogan won the WWF title. Do you think that that is a fact that happened, or just a bunch of crap that was made up in a locker room?
I think that's fact. I think that could very well be a fact. Now, remember, you're talking 30-some years ago, back when kayfabe was alive and well. Not saying it's dead, because, you know, that's a big debate, and, you know, shame on me for saying it, whatever. But, you're talking about a time where people were so delved into that world of professional wrestling where, you know, a loss was a loss. Like, that counted. Like, wins and losses was a thing. Maybe not to the boys, but those folks were seeing what you were losing and what you were winning. So, no. I mean, you're talking about you're seeing grannies that weren't plants slapping the crap out of people with purses and stuff. They thought it was still real to them, damn it. So, no, I'm going to say that could very well more than likely lean more towards fact than crap. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough. Well, we're down to the last few minutes of the show. I want to give you ample time, so if there's anything you would like to say to our listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, social medias, appearances, merchandise, your favorite video game, anything that you want, floor is all yours.
Awesome. Well, first and foremost, just want to thank you guys on Turnbuckle Turmoil for having me. It's much appreciated. I love having my own platform to, you know, talk my stuff and, you know, do my thing. But, basically, support. Just support me. Support everybody. Support indie wrestling. Professional wrestling is great right now. Like, it's such a good time to be alive and to be a fan. You have so many different wrestling companies, so many different choices, so many different flavors of ice cream to choose from. Let's stop complaining so much about what we don't like and appreciate what we do like. It's as simple as changing the channel. It's as simple as you know, just not following a thread, if that's what really irks your soul. But at the end of the day, what I want to preach is support each other, support indie wrestling, support everybody, because we can see that bigger picture and we can get to that bigger picture together rather than trying to step on each other to get to it. But, you know, with that being said, just feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me on social media. You know, you can search me on Facebook, Rico de la Vega, each word is spaced out. You can search me on Twitter. Follow me there. Follow me on Instagram. And that's going to be at Rico, it's going to be at Real Rico DLV for De La Vega, and that's going to be for Twitter and Instagram, at Real Rico DLV. And, yeah, man, that's basically it. Just follow me on my journey. Support indie wrestling, support professional wrestling, love each other. Let's help each other out, man. We don't get out of here alive.
Well, Rico de la Vega, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your Sunday to be with us. We appreciate it greatly. Hopefully we'll get the chance to do this again sometime very soon. And best of luck to you as you continue on with your career.
Thank you so much, brother. I look forward to breaking bread with you once more. So at no hesitation, feel free to reach out. Let's make things happen. Let's make 2020 a good one.
Absolutely. Fans, definitely, if you get the chance to be at a show where Rico de la Vega is, go buy yourself a ticket, enjoy what he does. If he's commentating on a TV show or a streaming service, take the time to listen to it. He is very good at that as well. We will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we have Stepstool Sarah, and then we'll be back next Sunday with CJ Stokes out of Utah. So make sure you have plans to be with us, and we will talk to you soon.
I can see you.